The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Welcome, one and all, to the SB Nation NFL Show. A reminder before we get started that this show is brought to you by DraftKings. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code SBNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That is code SBNFL only at DraftKings Sportsbook. There are only 2 weeks left in the regular season. Well, and one more Monday Night Football game to go. The playoffs obviously coming. We're not going anywhere, so don't worry about that. We are the SB Nation NFL Show. We are obsessed with the NFL. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, search for the SB Nation NFL Show. Leave a rating, write a review. Those things make us happy. You can also watch along live, whether live or in the after the moment, whenever you have time, if I could get my words together, on the SB Nation NFL YouTube page, Twitter page, or Facebook page. This is Monday Football Monday, perhaps the best show on the NFL show, if you're taking our humble opinions. Rachelle Prevett, as always, with some brand new Jays, is on the ones and twos. My name is RJ Ochoa, and with me, as always, he might be having a new Nespresso machine in the future. He was telling us right before we started getting going, Pete Sweeney! Pete, you don't have an espresso coffee this morning, obviously, but maybe you will in the future. Early congratulations to you in that respect.
Yeah, my mother sent me a gift certificate, so shout out to my mother. And I'm going to buy a new coffee machine. The coffee machine that I have right now it's about 4 years old. It just makes regular old pot of coffee. So we're going to upgrade in the near future. We're excited about that.
Well, happy for you, Pete Sweeney. Merry Christmas to you and to yours and to Rachelle and to everybody. It's the day after Christmas. I always wonder, when do we as a society, like, when do you stop saying that? You know what I'm saying? A better question is, and because we'll speak after the new year, when is the appropriate time to stop saying, like, Happy New Year? You know what I mean? Like, is it, you know, like January 8th? Like, do you get like a week's worth of that?
Yeah, the cutoff for me is January 7th. That's when the tree comes down. You got to move on at that stage. You get a little bit into the new year, and then around January 7th, January 8th, it's okay. Let's just focus on 2023.
So what if you saw somebody for the first time in the new year, like on the 9th? No, you're not giving them a Happy New Year.
No. Just, hey. No. How's your week?
Okay, that's a good way to spin it.
Yeah.
We have this is a weird week here on Monday Football Monday because we technically only have three games yesterday to talk about. Now, last week we had three games on Saturday, and we said, you know, we're not going to talk about those Saturday games because we only are here to talk about Sunday. If we were only here to talk about Sunday, it would be a rather depressing show because it was a rather depressing day of football. Thankfully, Saturday did exist. To keep us all merry and bright on Christmas Eve before Santa Claus got to work. Everybody knows what happened by now on Thursday night. The Jaguars took care of the Zach Wilson-led Jets. But you want to go in chronological order, Pete? You want to just go wherever we feel makes sense? Like, how do you want to do this?
Yeah, I think it probably makes sense to start with the Saturday games just because there were so many. Very quickly on the Thursday night football Jaguars, I called the Jaguars a number 13 seed on Twitter. You know, as the weekend played out, they are now in a position for the playoffs. I think we should talk about that very quickly. And I just think they're a team you don't want to play in the postseason just because their record is not up to snuff. It doesn't matter. You know, once the playoffs start, it doesn't matter if a team is 7-8. And I just think Trevor Lawrence has been playing like a top 5, top 10 type of quarterback You know, I didn't hear
that as a justification a week ago, but that's interesting.
Yeah. And so what I would tell you is I don't think they're a team you want to play right now. And they're going to be spicy in the playoffs. You know, they're coming off a couple big wins here. RJ, you know it well, and we'll see what happens. But I just think they're a very, very underrated storyline right now in the NFL, and they can make some waves in come playoff time here.
My only question is, you said a 13 seed. Did you misspeak, or did you view them that way?
I mean, like in March Madness, right? So you know.
Okay. Well, I didn't know because there's technically 14 playoff teams in the NFL. Like, I didn't know if you were like ranking them or something. Or
I think they're that team that you're seeing, and maybe they hit a lot of threes or something. And if your blue blood team doesn't shoot well in the first half, I think suddenly, you know, that second half might be interesting.
Yeah, you know, everybody always talks about the dreaded 5-12 matchup, but that 4-13, mm-hmm. I mean, just as sneaky if you really consider it that way. Okay.
Sneakier if you will.
That's true. Okay, let's start then with the Christmas Eve games. We'll save Christmas Day for afterwards. Pete, how could we not talk? How could we not start here?
What?
The Dallas Cowboys vanquished the big bad birds from the north 40-34. The final score. I saw you pick the Cowboys in our SB Nation Experts pick. So congratulations to you. Big time win for America's team. Dak Prescott continues to own the Philadelphia Eagles as he has for the majority of his career. 27-35, 347 yards, 3 touchdowns. Did have the pick 6 that was really gross to start the game, and had just an incredible, incredible 3rd-and-30 conversion to T.Y. Hilton that was kind of the signature moment of the game. I saw a tweet about this from a friend of the show, Dave Hellman from Fox Sports. If Patrick Mahomes converts 3rd-and-30, it's the only thing we're talking about for a week. Dak Prescott does, and it's just like the blink of an eye, gone.
I don't know if that's completely true. I think some of this quarterback stuff is crazy. Both in, you know, even when Kansas City people say, oh, if Josh Allen did something, and then the Buffalo people are like, oh, if Patrick Mahomes, and then Cincinnati people are like, Joe, I think it just everyone is always just looking for national coverage. And when another quarterback gets attention, they start to think, okay, my quarterback doesn't get enough attention. I think Dak probably has a better case for that than the guys I just mentioned, because I don't think he is sometimes considered of the elite. And I know a lot of Dallas Cowboy fans would say he should be. And so maybe you do have a point there. This was a really interesting game. You know, it looked for a little bit like Dallas was going to lose another one of those games where the top player for the other team is out. You have the MVP candidate in Jalen Hurts not playing, Gardner Minshew playing well at the beginning of this game, and then they ended up gutting it out. I did pick the Cowboys, as you said, and I think there was a temptation here because of how good the Philly defense is to go the other way, but I just knew how badly Dallas needed to win this game, and you know, at the end of the day, you got to go with the team that has the real starting quarterback, and so Cowboys were able to gut it out, and I guess congratulations to you, RJ. This is still a pretty interesting little division here, and as we stand today, the entire division is still in playoff position.
Yeah, despite the fact that the Giants and Commanders both lost, we'll obviously touch on that. The Commanders have lost 2 games in a row and remain in the playoffs, which again just kind of speaks to everything happening within the NFC as a whole. I really, you know, this was a big win for the Cowboys and an interesting loss for the Eagles. I don't think it changes the fact that the Eagles are going to win the NFC East. In case anyone is unaware, they do with any win or any Cowboys loss. The Cowboys play on Thursday Night Football. We talked about that a moment ago this week. So Philly could actually clinch the division without even playing another game. Dallas fell down multiple scores twice in this game. They were down 10 points at 2 different, you know, points in the game and stormed back. I mean, their offense was on fire. If you discount the end of each half, which was just kind of the kneeing it out, they had 9 possessions in the game. And the pick 6 happened, but the other 8 they scored on. I mean, like that, they were a remarkably efficient offense against what you said is one of the better defenses in the NFL.
Yeah. And, you know, as it stands in the NFC, if it plays out scratch, right, where, you know, the teams that are supposed to win, I anticipate if this matchup sticks, the Cowboys visiting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I think even though they're visiting, the Cowboys are could probably be slight favorites in that game. And so you would get divisional round weekend, this rubber match where Jalen Hurts would be back, division game, playoff game, one of these games that is going to really go down, I think, in NFC East history. And I think everyone wants to see that. And I think it would be a wild game, and especially when you have two division teams, just because the Eagles had such a great year, you could easily see the Cowboys going into Philly and winning. So we'll see if we get that. I know that it was talked about right after the game between the coaches. Didn't one of the coaches say to the other one, we'll see you
it
again?
It was Nick highlighter Sirianni. On his visor, Sirianni. Yeah.
We'll see you again. And I think there's a good chance. I think there's a good chance, especially with some of the problems that Tampa has. They're just a team that's waiting to be beat in the postseason. So we'll see if we get this rubber match and really early, I think, in the playoffs and in the divisional round potentially.
So my mentions have been filled with Eagles fans coping with the loss, and all sorts of people have the take that, like, well, this is Jalen Hurts winning MVP. Like, this is why Jalen Hurts is MVP. I want to be very, very clear here. Jalen Hurts is an exceptional player. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. So what I'm about to say is in no way meant as a slight. What did the Eagles miss? Like, how does Jalen Hurts truly change this game? And I say that, like, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but again, not sarcastically. You mentioned it. Gardner Minshew was awesome in this game. I mean, he was 24-40, 355 yards, two touchdowns, didn't have the two picks, although the Jayron Kearse one, and both picks were just incredible plays by Cowboys defenders. Devontae Smith, over 100 yards, two touchdowns. A.J. Brown, over 100 yards. I mean, like I said, does Jalen Hurts change Dallas scoring as often as they did?
One of the things
is
connect the whole NFL, right? So we're talking about the whole league when we do this show, and even just watching last night with Patrick Starr giving it to Russ Wilson, wouldn't the Denver Broncos be in just enormous amount of better shape if they had Gardner Minshew as their quarterback? I know that's insane to say at this stage when we had the offseason that we did when it came to Russ Wilson, but yeah, I mean, I think Minshew, every time he gets a spot start, he shows that he's a capable, I think, starter in the NFL. I don't know if he's in the top half of the league necessarily, but, you know, one of the 32 for me, Minshew is that guy. And you had a complete Eagles team on the other side defensively, and Cowboys were still able to drop 40. So I think it's a valid win. If you're looking for validity
is the word you're looking for.
I think if you're looking for validity, to me, this is still a valid win, even with Hurts not playing.
I mean, it's a weird win because of the fact that both teams are already in the playoffs, because of the fact that they might meet each other again, because of the Hurts factor. Like, it was a weird game. Yeah. It turned out to be a great game. I think if you didn't have a rooting interest, I'm sure it was really entertaining to watch kind of back and forth. It's going to be really interesting to watch this Eagles team, like how they respond this week. They've obviously only lost twice on the season. I don't know if you've seen this, Pete, right before we started recording. So Rachel, I'm sure you'll have some stuff over this over at BGN. Lane Johnson left this game, obviously one of the best players on the Eagles. And it was just reported that he suffered an abdominal injury. I think it is a tear that will knock him out for the rest of the regular season, which is obviously just two more games. But that it is a to be determined situation. After that. So the Eagles now, it remains to be seen whether or not they will, I don't want to call it a rush, but whether or not Jalen Hurts will return this week. They have two chances to win the division. Right. Both of the upcoming games for Philly are at home. And seemingly any game that they will play from this point on outside of what would be the Super Bowl will be at home. But so now they're potentially going to play the Saints on Sunday. We'll touch on New Orleans in a little bit. Without Jalen Hurts, without Lane Johnson, that is a rough go for the Philadelphia Eagles. It increases the need to lock up things as soon as possible.
In the way that it stands now, there's two games to play. And so you have Philly at 13-2, Minnesota, who had the thrilling win over the Giants. They are at 12-3. I believe Philly beat Minnesota earlier in the year.
Philly would have to lose both games.
And Minnesota would have to win both to flip. So if they win one, because they have that tiebreaker, they will not only lock up the division.
You just got to win one game, they lock everything up. Right?
They'll lock up the bye, and that would make week 17 meaningless for them. So there you go. So there's still something to play for. And it's interesting because you look again at the scope of the NFC. If they are able to lock it up this next week with a win over the Saints, how many players do they play against the Giants, who are probably going to need that week 17 win to stay in playoff position?
Week 18,
I'm sorry, with how the parity is at the bottom of those standings.
We've been talking about this a lot on the NFC's mixtape for obvious reasons, and we'll touch on it again this week, Brandon and I. But obviously, every Week 18 game is a divisional game across the NFL. You mentioned that the Giants are in Philly in Week 18, and the Commanders host the Cowboys. And we'll get to Minnesota, New York right now, but because of the fact that, spoiler alert, the Giants lost, this Cowboys win, Pete, in conjunction with that, locks Dallas into the 5 seed,
right,
if and when Philly clinches. So assuming Philly beats New Orleans next Sunday, they clinch the 1 seed. Dallas is locked into the 5. So not only is New York going to maybe win to get in game in Week 18, but the Commanders could be as well, and they could both draw Cowboys-Eagles teams that are obviously in some weird spots.
In a meaningless game, I don't know why you're playing Dak Prescott. So it really actually, this whole circumstance in a weird way really sets up the Giants and Commanders in good position. And obviously Seahawks, Lions, and Packers fans are not too thrilled about that.
And last thing, while all these balls are in the air, just on the subject of that, the Bucks won. We'll touch on that again as well. But because the Bucks won, they can win the NFC South if they beat the Panthers next week. Mm-hmm. Now, they are obviously, if they win the division, the 4 seed in the NFC. So you're looking at a world maybe where if the Bucks clinch and if Philly clinches, then both Dallas and Tampa know entering Week 18 that they're meeting each other in the wild card round. So it's not just knowing you can't improve your standing. It's literally knowing you're locked with a particular opponent set in mind. That doesn't necessarily happen from year to year.
Can you believe that we are going to be talking about an enormous Bucks-Panthers Week 17 game? Like, crazy that the importance that this game is going to have in the scope. I don't think this thing was ever predictable, you know, and it's just one of those things. Because of the division winner, it jumps right up to that 4 seed. It just becomes a massive, massive game.
Matt Rhule is sitting here sitting in Nebraska telling us, I told y'all we were really talented. Matt Rhule did not wind up as the head coach of the New York Giants, but Brian Daboll did. They lost another one. This one really hard to pick on the Giants for, Pete. Yeah. I'm sure your dad was a little bit bummed. The Vikings come away thanks to a 61-yard Greg Joseph field goal, 27-24, the final score. Minnesota gets to 12-3 on the season. Like you said, they keep their current pace with regards to the fight for the 1 seed in the NFC. They still need some help. But this was a really, really, really impressive game from the Vikings. This was a fun game overall, back and forth. Just a really good time, I thought. I think you were busy right now at this particular window, but mm-hmm. I had close eyes on this, obviously, since it had some implications for the Cowboys. Man, yeah. What a performance. Justin Jefferson was on fire.
Yeah, and you know, we get on Daniel Jones quite a bit, and I thought he played pretty well in this game. I know he had the interception. It was the first interception in weeks and weeks and weeks, but to me, putting the Giants in a position to win this game, and this was a game that it's just trying to keep control of what is your playoff picture. They lost a little bit of control with this. I think for them, and I know the no moral victory thing, but to play as well as they did against the Vikings and to have the circumstance that we just described going on left, like, I think the Giants have really shown to me that they are a playoff team. Now, sure, you have to do it against the Indianapolis Colts, right? Like, if you are a playoff team
next week,
you right. got to go rebound from this one really quickly and beat the Colts. And then, as we were describing, it probably sets up really well for you to play an Eagles team resting a lot of starters to lock up a playoff spot. But again, a good effort. What do you do about a 61-yard field goal? If that misses, who knows how it goes? It's a coin flip in overtime, and maybe you get this win. But I think the Giants deserve to be in the playoffs. I know we've been debating that all year long, and I think this is truly a playoff team. And kudos to the Vikings for pulling it out. What do they have, like a dozen one-score wins as part of their 12-3 record at this point, or 11 of them, or 10 of them, something like that. And so the Vikings continue to find a way, but they do feel very beatable as a second seed, which is weird to say.
See, like, this to me in many ways felt like the socks for Christmas game. Like, you know, you don't want to acknowledge that you really need it. Socks, underwear, whatever, like clothes yeah. in general, like you need it, but you don't, like, it's something you don't want to accept.
Right.
And I will say, like, I don't know that, like, there's a reason to accept that Daniel Jones is a good quarterback, but this game proved that, like, Daniel Jones has some talent. There's some talent living and lurking within Daniel Jones. I thought he was wonderful in this game. Again, they lost, and so, like, that's good. Well, he lost. Who cares? Blah, blah. And yeah. I don't know that the Giants should re-sign him, but, like, this, you know, he's made it difficult. He's made it a matter that you have to at least think about. But I understand, obviously, if the Giants want to move on, the overall sample size works against Daniel in that way. But you mentioned it, like Gardner Minshew, like Daniel Jones will not be out of the NFL. Like, he will definitely have a shot maybe, somewhere, somehow, some way in 2023.
Maybe what Daniel and Saquon should do is say, look, we're a package deal. So wherever they go, they come buy one, get one. And, you know, if it's not in New York, they can stick together and run the system somewhere else.
That's true. Similarly, the Sox for Christmas sort of spirit, Kirk Cousins was awesome in this game, dude. Like, no, nobody will give this man any credit. People are so stuck on and married to the joke and the meme. He was incredible as they were driving for the late game winning score. Oh, man, they have all these one possession wins. Oh, man, their point differential, blah, blah. They have 12 wins. And I'm not like trying to like, oh, boom, 12 wins. That undoes everything. But like, when their fourth quarter point differential is exceptional. Like, for whatever reason, that they're this wonky team, but when they have to have it, Kirk is usually nails. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, typically when a receiver has a season like Justin Jefferson is having, the quarterback wins MVP. I know! That's why I picked Kirk Cousins to win MVP. That was the logic, but people can't get past the joke of it all. Justin Jefferson is amazing. I mean, he is... We kind of like change this every week. If I have to pick the best receiver in the NFL, it's him.
Yeah, I think it's between him and Tyreek, but it's just as far as pure receiver and high pointing and landing on your feet in an athletic position to go get the yards after the catch. I think you're right. I think Jefferson is the best receiver in the NFL. Shouldn't forget about not hassling the Hawk. Hawkinson has...
Dude, sort of what a performance. I mean, like, that trade has worked out for them.
13 catches for 109 and two touchdowns. And when
ask me who started Kirk and TJ in his fantasy semifinals.
Who started Kirk and TJ?
That would be R to the J.
I think it's been important because we, in the grand scope of the Vikings, we were wondering when Adam Thielen would taper off, and it finally happened, right? And so I think adding Hawkinson to that mix of pass catchers for them has just been enormous, because you need multiple in the NFL nowadays, because there are ways to lock down certain receivers. They weren't able to do with Jefferson, but there are weeks where the defense is going to be good enough and you got to win with KJ Osborne and Hawkinson. And I think they're showing that they can win in multiple ways, man. It's been I in Kansas City, I sometimes call them the cardiac Chiefs. I don't know what the verb would be or the adjective would be for the Vikings, but they keep their fans on their toes each and every
vivacious
week. The vivacious Vikings. That's nice. And you would, I think if you're a Vikings fan, you're hoping that it can be just a little bit more comfortable as you go here. And look, they're, you know, it's a long shot, but they're in position to get the bye week as well. So it's just been a nice season for Minnesota. And I think you're right. I think it's a, you know, you should call it a Sox game. It's, to me, this is a game where both quarterbacks probably deserve a little bit more respect than they get on a regular basis.
That's well said. Okay, so the Carolina Panthers, I mentioned I started Kirk and TJ in my fantasy semifinals. I went up against the Lions defense. So thank you, Carolina Panthers, who hung 37 over the Lions, 37-23, the final score. Look, the Lions have proven that they're a serious team. They're not like some flash in the pan, but this was kind of like you said, okay, Giants, now go prove it against the Colts. Like, take care of them, take care of business. This was a take care of business game from the Detroit Lions, and they absolutely did not. Dante Foreman ran all and Chuba Hubbard. I mean, like, the Panthers ran everywhere against the Lions. This was unbelievable. This was the shocker of the day.
Well, you have a team with Sam Darnold, and they trade away Christian McCaffrey, so on and so forth. Everyone knows they changed head coaches, and then they dropped 570 net yards in the Lions. This is why people can't get truly 100% excited about Detroit, because their offense is exciting, but their defense is their grand weakness. And you're going to win in the postseason. If you're going to make the postseason, you have to be a complete football team. And the Lions defense is just coming up short. You know, it's very, very clear that this is going to be their Achilles heel. And then I just think that the big message with Carolina is, and that I got to go back to Las Vegas/Oakland Raiders, right? And you're like, well, what are you talking about? Well, the Las Vegas Raiders had a tumultuous, to say the least, 2021 season. Somehow, some way, interim head coach Rich Bisaccia got them in the playoffs. I think they were the sixth seed, right? Now you have Steve Wilks takes over, a disaster. You trade your best player. You don't have a quarterback. Your quarterback went to another team. Your quarterback is Sam Darnold, and you're one win away from being in a playoff position. Let's not overthink this and go get a different head coach in the offseason. Even if they aren't able to pull this off, what has been a season complete turnaround for the Panthers. My come up of the week and really come up of the year goes to Steve Wilks. If a coach could get comeback player of the year or comeback something of the year, it would be Steve Wilks. And like I said, look to Vegas. Don't go and get shiny new toy Josh McDaniels when you had your interim coach that somehow managed a complete disaster and ended up in the postseason, right? This is the easiest decision in the world, and I hope that Carolina makes the right one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's weird to like put him in coach of the year honors or conversations, but yeah, like you're right.
Comeback coach that he would get this award.
And Steve Wilkes, you know, when he was hired as the head coach in Arizona, there was all the talk that, like, he was so beloved within the Panthers organization. Like, you got really lucky. Like, you could have just gone, you know, right once, Panthers, but you went left three times. You know what I mean? So you got here. Don't mess it up. You know, focus on the future. If you wind up in this division, they do control their own fate. So you mentioned it. We'll talk Tampa in a little bit. But Tampa, Carolina, not quite for the NFC South. I mean, it is for the Bucs, but I don't know. Panthers did beat the Bucs. I mean, it is really impressive how they did not just lay down the way we're seeing other teams. Like you mentioned, the Raiders, the Colts have just laid down and quit. I mean, like, It really does speak to how valuable the interim coach selection can be.
Yeah, and I just think it's worth also showing, like, sometimes you try to write a team off and you know they do just kind of lay down, and if you're just able to get something going, you never know if the standings can come back to you. I think you're seeing that in both conferences at this point. That's why, you know, even if in the AFC, if you're the outside looking in, like the Patriots and the Jets, just continue to try to win games, and you never know what can happen in the NFL where teams fall out. And I just think this is one of those cases, and I like Carolina against Tampa. To me, they're just a more complete football team right now. And it's just so intriguing that this team that was done, forked, they're changing head coaches, they're getting rid of their best player, they're getting rid of their quarterback, is now in a position to make the postseason.
I will say, I mean, it kind of got away from Detroit early, and so that's a big reason for this. But we talked about all the success that Carolina had on the ground. Have you seen the box score from this game? Like, have you seen what the – so this is just it from a rushing standpoint. Detroit, Jared Goff, 3 attempts, 15 yards. He was their leading rusher. DeAndre Swift, 4 attempts, 12 yards. Jamal Williams, 7 attempts, 11 yards. I mean, like, what happened? I mean, like, this is one of those, like, and we joked about it, but, like, all last week, Cowboys fans got so triggered by the loss to Jacksonville. This is the triggering loss if you're a Lions fan. It's like, oh, man, see, like, I trusted them. I fell for it. I can't do it. Look at that. Nothing's working now. Same old Lions.
Yeah, and now they had a nice, like, real nice stretch going, and now the playoffs and the chance to break in and break out is way up in the air, and we'll see if they're able to do it. I think if they continue to win games, they have a shot here, but
they had a chance, dude, with the Giants losing, the Commanders losing, the Seahawks losing. Like, it was their week, and they just, you know, couldn't do it.
And they got two division games left, and the Bears and Packers, and you know, none of them are just assumed wins, just with Fields in Chicago. I know the Bills were able to take care of them, but the Bears were leading at halftime, and then you have the Packers. And so, you know, that's a team that is in a position that needs to win right now. So it's two tough games. You know, if I'm guessing right now, Detroit will end up being 1 year away, which is kind of what we thought going in.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Cincinnati Bengals jumped out to a 22-0 lead against the New England Patriots on the road against the Patriots. They had not beaten them there since 1986. So it's 22-0 at halftime. The final score, 22-18. The Patriots made it a bit of a race, kind of a sloppy end of the game, not quite as sloppy as in Vegas a week ago. But the Bengals pick up another win, keep themselves alive to clinch the AFC North, in a few weeks. But So kind of troubling the way Cincinnati didn't hold on, but still, this was a really impressive performance. Like, it looked like they were flexing all over the Patriots. Meanwhile, New England looks really lost. Everyone is really dragging Mac Jones, seemingly appropriately so. Looked like he just had the cheapest of cheap shots after an interception as the return was happening. Just a lot of people calling him the dirtiest player in the NFL, that kind of stuff. The NFL's apparently going to, you know, look into this and blah, blah, blah. But these are not good times for the New England Patriots.
Yeah, and look, I think you're right. I think the Bengals really started out this game hot, and they looked like that team that we had mentioned. Okay, last year they turned it on at the right time, getting hot at the right time, and then all of a sudden New England started to crawl back in this game, right? So this was a game, as you were describing, at the beginning of it, the Cincinnati Bengals should have won like 35-6 or something, and it ended up being really close, and it took a fumble. But that's what's crazy about this score, and this is why sometimes you got to go beyond the box score. The Patriots were in a position to score a touchdown and win the game. And had it not been for Ramondre Stevenson fumbling the football and Cincinnati getting it back, they might have lost. And so,
right,
just got to keep your foot on the gas. Football is a weird game where sometimes a big lead, like in the NHL, they call it the most dangerous lead in hockey, 2-0. Sometimes when you get up early,
it's said in worldwide soccer, 2-0 is what we're looking for.
2-0. It's dangerous because you have this tendency to take the your foot off the gas, and then the other team can kind of get some momentum going. So as bad as New England played, they were in a position to win, and it took a fumble. And usually in those situations, the better team wins, which is what we ended up seeing. But right, it could have easily went the other way.
Yeah, I'll say it's we're at that time of year. Like, you know, we just talked about the Eagles a little while ago, and like it's like, well, when do you rest? When, you know, like those are, people say like first world problems. Those are Kansas City Chiefs problems, right? Like when do you rest? Like, do you take 1 week off, 2 weeks off? Like do the bye, blah, you know what I mean? Whatever. However you define momentum's up to you, but it is a difficult balance.
Cincinnati's right there, and we got the AFC game of the year, if you want to call it that, coming up
next week.
Cincinnati and Buffalo going at it, and Kansas City loves it because they need a Cincinnati win, which is weird to say. And then on the New England side, like, just one last point. It's like, you know what this team might be missing? An offensive coordinator. And if they had one and had an offensive coordinator and an offensive mind as offensive coordinator, would it be a difference of, would 7-8 suddenly be 8-7 or 9-6? I tend to think so. So we give Bill Belichick a lot of respect, and well-deserved, but the idea that he came into the season is like, I'm just going to coach all three phases. I think you're seeing the difference between, you know, maybe a two or three more wins and what could potentially be a playoff berth here.
An interesting game, but very, very excited for next week's Monday night. ESPN is sitting here like, we earned this. All right. Have you seen the games that we've called? All right. We earned. You think ESPN's looking ahead? How many times tonight during Colts Chargers?
Yeah.
Do you think ESPN like gives the like next week on Monday Night Football graphic? Eric,
you're going to know by the end of Colts and Chargers what's happening next week. And you're going to really know. Like really, yeah, really. Yes.
Buck and Aikman are going to like, they're going to talk Burrow and Allen the whole fourth quarter.
The fourth quarter. So. Yes. Because you would think, and while the NFL is unpredictable, I mean, we say that every week, but you would think that in the fourth quarter, the Chargers are going to have control. And it's one of those things where they can use the entire fourth to preview next week. Yeah.
It is the Chargers. So, you know, we'll see.
Right. I mean, if there's any team that is going to make this very interesting, it's Brandon Staley and the mighty Chargers. That's true.
We might as well talk about Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. 35-13 was the final score as the Bills won in Chicago. All the games looked so cold. Obviously, we had the Arctic, you know, blast, crazy sequence that made it a super cold Christmas. But for some reason, this game looked the coldest. Like no other game looked. I saw in all the pregame stuff, Stacey Dales from NFL Network was there, and I felt so badly for her. Like watching her on TV, she looked so cold. It looked just unbearably cold, but the Bills got the win. The final score, like I said, Pete, was 35-13, and I don't know how much of this you're watching in the moment, but like, this was tough. This was a tough win for the Bills. Josh Allen, I mean, you know, what separates him from Mahomes, in my mind, Mahomes makes mistakes. I don't at all mean to imply that he is perfect the way that Arrowhead Pride does, all right? But but like his mistakes are more understandable, right? Like we talked last year, like his mistakes were sort of born out of like arrogance and his own skill set in a positive way. Allen's mistakes are like, what are you doing? Like,
right.
I have no idea.
His brain stops working sometimes on these interceptions.
Yeah. Like I have, he almost let the Bears back in this game, you know, by himself.
Yeah.
And again, they had two, you know, scores late in the fourth quarter that made this look a lot prettier than it really was. This was by no means an easy win or a comfortable win for Bills fans.
This is why I think the Bengals are going to beat the Bills. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but
you mean on Monday night or in general?
On Monday night, like next week. And the reason that's such a big deal is because the Bills would lose control of the bye. you know, at this stage of the game. And that's why it's like a playoff game in a sense.
The Bills are your Eagles, Pete. I saw you I saw you retweet somebody who tweeted like, Pete Sweeney has been telling us for a while now, yeah, the Bills are due for another loss. And then...
I try to be fair about that. Like, I'm not just saying that because it would be good for the Chiefs. It would be great for the Chiefs, but they are not playing these games like that dominating team we saw during the first 7 weeks of the season. They're just not playing with their food.
Totally agree.
They're not the same team. And that's why, like, I just think Cincinnati's playing better right now. It's Monday night. The Chiefs played in Cincinnati. That place was rocking. It's going to be a tough win for the Bills to get, and especially playing like this where you're flirting with disaster with the Chicago Bears. The one thing I'll say, and this has to be said, Buffalo came in with a really good defensive plan. We have seen Justin Fields and what he can do on the ground. They had a spy on him all game. Only the 7 rushes for 11 yards, 1.6 yards per attempt, eliminated that. And that's
going
to be
the problem. I was going up against Fields in my semifinal too, baby.
And from a Chicago standpoint, as they lean into Fields, presumably as the quarterback of the future, this guy that can really change the game. I mean, there's been times the series look like Michael Vick. They need to lean into Justin Fields, but he needs help. When they're spying him and eliminate him running on the ground, you need a better wide receiver to throw to than Byron Pringle. I covered Byron Pringle for he's fine, but you need to load up weapons for him.
Two people had more catches or receptions than Byron Pringle, and they were Cole Kmet, so your tight end who you're dumping things off to, and David Montgomery, who you're also dumping.
You got to get
more aerial if you're the Bears. You just
pass catchers, right? Because when Fields is stymied, you need to have receivers that he can to throw to that can also be playmakers. It's a one man team at this stage, and look, it's the most important position. Hard to do. You got that crossed off. Now you gotta load up. And Buffalo, again, they're flirting with disaster. Maybe they can flirt their way to the bye week, which it seems like they desperately need. But man, this next game is really intriguing. Chicago and Buffalo and Cincinnati. I'm very excited to watch what takes place next week.
I'm in no way like in a you gotta prove it to me, Buffalo, you know, sort of place. Like the Bills have proved it. Like, you know what I mean? Like anyone saying or intimating that they haven't is just being ridiculous at this point. But I'm with you. Like, I'm very excited. Like, I wouldn't treat this as like an announcement game for Cincinnati. I mean, you went to the Super Bowl last year, right? Like, you know, that, and like, that's like, I mean, this isn't about previewing next week, but I want to see the Bengals. It's in the jungle. Walk tall. One team in that game has been to a Super Bowl in recent memory, and it's not Josh Allen's Bills.
The implications are just enormous. If you lose that game, you slide to number 3, I believe, because Cincinnati would then have a tiebreaker. And so then you're playing a Chargers, a Dolphins, a New England Patriots. So that's 2 division teams. We know what happened with Miami going into Buffalo. They almost were able to win that game. I don't want to play Justin Herbert and with presumably a returning Joey Bosa. Like, this is huge. You don't want to play that first week. Wildcard upsets happen all the time. It's rare that we get a game this late in the year with just enormous, enormous implications like we're going to get next Monday night. And that's why it's going to probably be one of the highest rated games of the year.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about if you're the Bills, the difference in losing is a first round bye and playing the Chargers, like you're saying. Like, that's just.
Or the Dolphins, not, just depending like, on how it goes. Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know who I think would have a better chance. Like, I think the Bills would invite a Dolphins game. You know, they'd be like, we beat them in the snow. You know what I mean? Like,
I think you'd always take playing Tua over Justin Herbert, in my opinion.
That's exactly what I'm saying. But because of the standings in the moment, but okay. But if that all happened, Kansas City would take the first seed because Kansas City flew a little bit close to the sun, just a little bit on Saturday against the Seattle Seahawks, 24-10, the final score. Kadarius Toney, once again, shout out to Papa Sweeney, got the scoring started early on. Jerick McKinnon got in the end zone. Patrick Mahomes had an amazing touchdown run, all sorts of good times and good vibes as the Chiefs picked up their 12th win of the season.
Yeah, I think the big thing for Kansas City in this game is they had to see the defense perform a little bit better, and they did. I always say this, and fans in KC have been a little bit panicked as the way that they've played these last few weeks where you're flirting with teams like the Broncos, Texans, and Seahawks, especially after yesterday. It should have never been a 34-28 game against the Denver Broncos. I think we know that now. But the Chiefs' defense played well, and they needed to against a team that they should have played well against. The offense, it started off good. There was some sludge in the middle where the Seahawks were able to muck it up, and then they were able to score a touchdown at the end. And this is something that I always try to tell Chiefs fans on the radio and elsewhere here is like, if there's one unit that you need to see perform well to feel good about in the playoffs, it's the defense. The offense is always going to figure it out. You have Patrick Mahomes and you have a lot of weapons. They still have 2 weeks to put a complete effort together. I don't know if we've seen that necessarily from them in the second half, but it's a case for a lot of these teams with a lot of wins. You can point to a lot of flaws, and that's how the NFL has drawn it up, is, you know, we want teams to have a chance at every given Sunday. And so you got the Broncos coming up, who are just in a complete disaster again. Oh, like, you were 34-28 the last time against the Broncos. This should be 40-0. Chad Henne should be in the fourth quarter, and I think it would be good for the Chiefs to show that. But yeah, look, you're able to get the win. You're 12-3, and you're a very possible Bengals win away from not having to play on Wild Card Weekend.
Rachel notes here for the visual audience that of Patrick Mahomes' 224 passing yards, more than half went to Travis Kelce. It's been a minute. You know, we were over here taking victory laps. Not that Mark Andrews is really closing the gap, but like, I feel like it's been a month since Travis Kelce got into the end zone. And I say that again, I have some Travis Kelce shares in the fantasy league that I've referenced several times here. Pete, give me some comfort, because I'm headed to the championship next week. I need to know that Travis Kelce is going to show up for me as I attempt to go for title number 4.
You'll be fine, I think, against the Denver Broncos, especially now that they have absolutely nothing to play for, it seems like, for the next 5 years. But
don't ruin our Broncos segment.
This was Kelce with a 52-yarder late in the game, right? So he got 113 yards, but he needed a 52-yarder to do so. They were actually doing a pretty good job. The final box score wouldn't tell you that they did a good job with Kelce. But that's going to be the hump for the Chiefs, right, in the postseason. And this is something that they haven't been used to in recent years, because if a team was able to rough Travis Kelce up in the first 2 yards, bracket him, double him, they would always be able to turn to Tyreek Hill. You're going to have to see a game where Juju Smith-Schuster is going to have to, in a way, win a game for Kansas City. And can he be that guy? I think we've seen flashes of that. We've not seen flashes of that in a postseason situation where now it's going to be, I think the spotlight's going to be on him. Andy Reid is still having this tendency where you have Isaiah Pacheco in the middle of the game at 5 yards a clip, and they continue to pass the football. And, you know, I think this offense runs best, and it has for them in recent years. It always runs better when they're just keeping an eye on the pass to run ratio. It's never going to be 50-50 with Andy Reid, but it's got to be closer to like that 60-40 range. And sometimes they get away from the run and they end up getting hurt by it. And especially when you have this rookie who is good. I mean, he's come out of the woodwork, and he's a really good player for Kansas City, and they're just not leaning into him enough. And I think sometimes it hurts the offense.
Well, so like, that's who's offensive rookie of the year? Garrett Wilson?
I guess. Or is there someone we're not thinking of? Is there?
I mean, the Damian Pierce steam was kind of lost. Obviously, the Breece Hall steam was kind of lost. Maybe Chris Olave, if you want to go there. Like, I don't have a problem with that. Christian Watson's made and especially if the Packers make the playoffs, you could kind of see like the narrative like taking off around him. Isaiah Pacheco deserves to be in the conversation at the very least.
I just pulled it up for us. Garrett Wilson is the favorite, I believe, going into the weekend. And then went Ken Walker, Brock Purdy.
Kenneth Walker. Brock Purdy winning it would be ridiculous. Like, Christian, I mean, Watson. I'm not trying to take away from what he's doing, but the sample size is so small.
I think it's probably Wilson or Walker, just because of the full year. Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. That's fair. Let's move on quickly. Speaking of Mark Andrews, the Baltimore Ravens, good one out. All right. This was tough. This was tough scenes. It looked really cold here too. But somehow, some way, the Ravens won another game without Lamar Jackson. They clinched a playoff berth, Pete Sweeney. 17-9, the final score, over the Atlanta Falcons, the old Joe Flacco, Matt Ryan Bowl. Mark Andrews was the leading receiver for the Ravens. Incidentally, 3 catches, 45 yards. Travis Kelce at 52 on 1 reception. Just kind of a do what you have to do game for the Ravens, which has kind of been their MO. And for what it's worth, next week's Ravens-Steelers game, in case anybody missed this, flexed into Sunday Night Football. They are in Chargers-Rams out, back to the afternoon slot.
Yeah, I think this is a team without their starting quarterback trying to tread water until he gets back. And in that process, you're going to have games like this. And at the end of it, you're not really looking at how pretty it is. You don't have your starting quarterback. You went through this at the beginning of the year, RJ. You just want to see wins. Doesn't matter how it happens. And so they were able, as you said, to gut it out. No real flashy numbers here. I think it's an interesting and budding Atlanta Falcons team where we're going to see what Ritter is and continue to see where it is. And I think he might be the guy for them moving forward. And, you know, they're building toward that. But to me, all this was about was, okay, let's continue to win games. If you're the the Baltimore Ravens and to continue to have control of the division until Lamar gets back.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to take away from this. I tell you what, I'm really pumped for this week's primetime games, this coming week. You got Dallas-Tennessee on Thursday night, which isn't that great of a game, but, I mean, I've got a vested interest. Sunday night, now we've got Baltimore-Pittsburgh, which is always great. Like, I don't care who's playing. Yeah, you could find, you know, 22 guys out on the street. They'll play a great game because it's Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh. I don't know what
the Tomlin streak is on the line, too. Baltimore could finally end what has been.
Oh, well, dude, Tomlin, we got to get to that. But, there. Like, yeah, I mean, he can do it. And I mean, yeah. And the Ravens are already in the playoffs. You could kind of, I mean, whatever. But and then we got the Monday Night Football game that we talked about. Atlanta, we also didn't touch on Seattle much a moment ago. Like, Atlanta's kind of lost. I think Seattle's floundering. I don't want to go back there. I don't know that they make the playoffs, but like, Atlanta's in a weird spot. I don't know that I'm more interested to see how any team handles the offseason than I am the Falcons. Like, the Falcons are really facing a fork in the road. And I don't know what the two options are, but like, they got to pick something.
Do you think that the Falcons will move on from the head coach Arthur Smith and try to go elsewhere, or do you think they're going to lean into one more year with Smith Ritter and see what you got?
I mean, I don't know. It's so like, I'm not the biggest like Arthur Smith believer, but I think there are things you can believe in, and I think he's been dealt a really weird hand. Hey, save aging Matt Ryan. Hey, we're interested in Deshaun Watson. Now we're going to trade away Matt Ryan. We're going to give you Desmond Ritter. We got Marcus Mariota, you know, the Calvin Ridley suspension. We're going to trade him. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's been a lot of funk. I mean, like, yeah. I think, you know, it's a weird time. And the NFC South is in such a weird place. Like, you're not far away from winning that division. Like, I think it's worth, I want to call it doubling down, but giving him a third year.
It's just tough when you start your head coaching tenure and you're right, you just like don't have a reliable quarterback, and then it just becomes, how could you truly judge that body of work?
It's why I always thought when Dan Quinn took over that job before Arthur Smith, I thought like, well, this is what you do. Like, if you're the hot guy, go somewhere with a quarterback. It's like when Mike McCarthy, I don't know if you remember, he interviewed with the Panthers and the Browns at the time, and the Cowboys, and it's like, why would you, like, if you're a head coach and you have like one chance, like, pick the team with a franchise quarterback. You know what I mean? Like,
I think what makes the coaching carousel really interesting this year is, and this news came out over the weekend, and you were involved maybe in the offseason more with it. It seems like McCarthy is safe now, but Sean Payton and Vic Fangio are deciding to team up. That broke. And I think it's going to create some scenarios in the NFL where maybe an owner would have given current head coach whatever another season. And now what it's turned into is, okay, well, we want to go get that tandem. And so maybe we're moving on a little bit a year
it's
earlier.
Very similar to McCarthy. I don't know if you remember, this is a while ago now, like he had the whole, like, he built a front office and a coaching staff and they watched film every, you know, it's very, again, but Sean Payton's like cooler. So people like eat it up with him. But, and what
there's
going
to be an owner out there that moves on a year earlier to get him. I
agree with you. But what makes this situation different, and this takes the Falcons out of the running hypothetically, is you have to trade for him. Like, right, McCarthy, right. Even if you were in love with him, you could just, you know, sign him to be your head coach. Like, you have to trade for Sean Payton. And so it's like, not only are the Falcons out of the running because they're the Falcons and it's the Saints, but like, what is it going to cost to get him? You know, like, it's not just you have to get the Saints to agree. It's you have to get them to agree on a price. But speaking of the Saints, they are alive in the NFC South, Pete Sweeney. 6-9, their final record after a win, 17-10 over the Cleveland Browns, who fall to 6-9. They have, you know, really just been a gross offensive production since Deshaun Watson returned. I don't think anybody is sad to see that. He was 15 of 31 for 135 yards through an interception. Amari Cooper led the way, 6 catches for 72 yards. Meanwhile, Andy Dalton, 8 of 15 for 92 yards. That was it. This was a gross game for both teams, but the Saints got the win.
Obviously, the panic level right now surrounding Russell Wilson is at a 10 and the meter is broken. Where's the panic level when it comes to what Watson is at this stage?
From just a football level, right? Like, Deshaun Watson led the NFL.
That's what I'm talking about.
No. But I'm asking a question.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Deshaun Watson led the NFL in passing in 2020, right? Is that correct with the Texans? Because he missed all last season. So he led the NFL in passing in 2020. Like, I did not find that to be like, again, just talking football here, like an incredible season. Like, the way that stat is like thrown out, people, well, he led the NFL in passing. You know who else once led the NFL in passing? Houston Texans quarterback Matt Schaub. Right. Like, that isn't necessarily like the most indicative thing of all things. And I remember after that 2020 season ended, there was this this clip of Deshaun and J.J. Watt walking off the field together after the regular season, well, obviously their season ended. And JJ said, I'm sorry we wasted one of your years. And it was just like the most JJ Watt thing of all time. Yeah. Right. And they were so bad. Like, you know, and the Texans, again, from just a football operation, have had a lot of things going on for a long time. But Deshaun is not somebody who has elevated them. You know what I mean? Like, or did elevate them. And so, like, again, I hate to make this just about football because everything else should be mentioned. But, like, I did not think he was a player worth even just the draft capital that was associated with acquiring him, let alone, obviously, all of the
fully guaranteed contract.
Yeah, like, it is. This was a this is such a great point, Pete. Like, everyone is taking turns bagging on Russell Wilson. The Browns are just as lost, and they're awful people on top of that.
Right. As much as we make fun of Russ, he did not have the off the field situation that Deshaun had.
Just to add to your point, as much as to make fun of Russ, by all measures, he's a wonderful human being. Like, he's not only not a terrible person, but by all measures, he is a wonderful human being. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far with Russ.
Fine. You get the point.
He is not Deshaun Watson in the off the field stuff, for sure, but by far. And look, you not only signed up for this, you've made a lot of fans in your organization sort of try to find other teams to root for in this way. It's not every Browns fan, but some of the more passionate Brown fans are still fine with this. But it paints you a 2023, now that you're at 6-9, your season's over, it paints you a scenario where it's like this, if you risked all that dignity, money, everything, right? You know, like, it has to work. And I just don't think that is even close to rock solid at this stage. And so you got to be a little bit panicked if you're Cleveland.
I don't know how you're not. I don't know how Kevin Stefanski can feel 100% safe either. Like, this has been a weird season for them. The Saints need the most help of the non-Falcons teams in the NFC South. They can still win it, but the things have to go exactly their way. I'm so interested to see what they do. Deshaun Payton return, but whatever. That's a conversation for another day. Let's keep moving. Speaking of Houston, we've had some nice kind of segues here. They picked up their second win of the season, played the Cowboys tough, played the Texans tough, played the Chiefs tough. So guess what, Titans? You're next. The Tennessee Titans fell to the Houston Texans in just a rough game for the Titans. Ryan Tannehill, obviously, done for the season. Malik Willis threw the ball more than five times. Was 14 of 23 for 99 yards, two interceptions. Derrick Henry did have a successful day against the Texans. He had 23 carries for 126 yards and a touchdown. But Davis Mills and Jeff Driscoll, that weird combination, kind of did just enough for Houston. And so everything's coming up Houston, Pete. Again, football-wise.
You can't let a team with two quarterbacks beat you. You just can't.
I agree with that, even though our teams almost just did that.
Yes,
But Houston can feel really good about themselves as a football team based on the month of December, right? Hey, hung with the Cowboys, hung with the Chiefs, beat the Titans. They're still going to get the number one overall pick. Things are good for the Texans.
This whole game, I mean, good to see the Texans get a win. I know when you're a fan of these teams that are having the complete year being thrown away, you get a little bit nervous when you start to win games at the end because it can really impact your future. We're seeing it in Jacksonville and New York. We've talked about that on this podcast before. This is more about the Titans and losing control of the playoffs and that team now being Jacksonville. And it just leaves you wondering, okay, this is a team that bet on itself in a sense of trading A.J. Brown away. And now you're looking at being outside the postseason. So I just wonder about the long-term implications of this. And don't forget, this is also a team that got rid of their general manager in the middle of the year. So what does it mean for Mike Vrabel if this team finds itself on the outside looking in?
This was a weird loss for Tennessee in that it's a loss and it's frustrating, but it kind of sets them up in a nice spot. And obviously, I've got some eyes on this because they host the Cowboys on Thursday. So regardless of what happens with the Titans this week, not just within their own game, but with the Jacksonville Jaguars as well, nothing can really change. They are going to play a title game against the Jaguars in week 18 for the AFC South, probably Sunday Night Football, right? We both think?
I mean, it would have to be, I would believe, yes.
I asked Stats and BLG this. Can you remember the last Sunday night game or the last non-Thursday night primetime game in Jacksonville? Because that game is in Duval County.
It would have had to have been that year that they went to the AFC title game, right?
I don't even think they played in prime. Like, I don't think they got flexed to anything. You know what I mean? Like, they're definitely not getting scheduled for Sunday Night Football. So it's going to be kind of cool. You know what I mean? To see the Jaguars and Titans. But because of that, the Titans have an advantage over the Jaguars in that they play on Thursday. The Jaguars play on Sunday this coming week. So if you're the Titans, Pete, you're Mike Vrabel. Your job's kind of on the line now. Your GM's gone. Do you not punt on Thursday night and say, you know what, dude? We got to rest. We got a division title game next week. We don't need to be wasting it. We don't need to be wasting Derrick Henry against the Cowboys in a meaningless game.
Yeah, I actually was able to pull this up quick. In that year that they went to the AFC title, they didn't have a primetime game, it looks like, which is crazy to say. I would punt. Yeah, I would punt on it. I think that there's no moral victory at this stage. You got to do whatever it takes to make the postseason, and I would rest whoever needs to be rested. It's one of those scenarios, and you see this with week 18/week 17 in previous years all the time. If a player is not 100%, he should not be playing. Even if it's 95%, right? You rest that player, and I think you go into it like that. Yeah.
We have five games left, so let's step on the gas a little bit. The San Francisco 49ers also still have a chance for the number one seed in the NFC because they kept pace themselves 37-20, the final score against the Washington Commanders. We talked a lot of fantasy. Well, I did. George Kittle, 6 catches, 120, and 2 touchdowns. Didn't matter that I was going up against him because everything else went my way. But I hope if you listening had him on your team that you came out on top. Brock Purdy, 15 of 22, 234 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. There was this weird, like, the Commanders may turn to Carson Wentz, you know, energy entering this game, and they did. I don't know why. I don't know what Washington's thinking at this point.
No, I don't know why. I don't know why either. I mean, you know what you have in Carson Wentz. You can't.
And it's not like you're the Falcons, right? Like, you're just, like, trying to stay cute. You're a playoff team. Quit messing with things.
Yeah, and now it creates that scenario. Like, it's exactly where you don't want to be when you're in a playoff position, because there's going to be questions all week about who's going to start, you know, which direction you're going to go in. And on the other side, San Francisco just keeps rolling. It's been really impressive, I think, especially in this stage of where the NFL is at, to be so reliant on your defense and be that being your identity in 2022 of a team that nobody wants to play in the NFC playoffs. Purdy is doing enough. It feels very much like the last time they went to the Super Bowl, where
how'd that go, Pete? How'd that go?
It didn't go great for San Fran once they got to the final second half of that game. There's only one second half.
Do we have time to run Wasp?
There was too much time to run Wasp. We know how it ended, but for them to make the Super Bowl, it just reminds me a lot of that team. And you're getting the ball quickly into the hands of your playmakers. You let them do their thing, and the defense takes care of the rest. And so it's a very scary team to play. I think you can speak to this. I don't think you want to play the San Francisco 49ers in the playoffs.
I am more afraid of them than I am the Philadelphia Eagles, certainly, without question. They are very scary. We talked offensive rookie of the year. I mean defensive player of the year is Nick Bosa. Like, Micah Parsons had a chance, was in the conversation, but Nick has separated himself over the last few weeks. Like, it is Nick Bosa's award to lose at this point. Pete had a sneeze.
Sorry. I had to sneeze. Yeah. And that's really impressive, I think, for Bosa, just because you would have said at the middle of the year, I would bet my life savings that it would be Parsons. So it's just been a late surge.
I would bet your life savings, not mine. That Nespresso machine, baby.
Well, yeah, that's all I have my name to at this stage, is that Nespresso. So
Christmas Eve night, the Pittsburgh Steelers, we talked about this a little while ago.
Miracle.
Kept hope alive for Mike Tomlin, finishing above 500.
They weren't in the red zone before the last drive.
This was really cool. Like, this was not a great game by any stretch, 13-10, the final score. This was just really cool to watch. And I think the broadcast handled, unfortunately, the Franco Harris jersey retirement really poorly. They really didn't let us see any of it, which was just really frustrating. But obviously an emotionally charged night for the Steelers, what with Franco passing away last week. Playing for themselves. Like, if there's a team, I said this on the look ahead, like, if there's a team that history matters to, it's the Steelers. I'm not saying it matters 0% to other teams or other players, but nobody buys in the way that Mike Tomlin's Pittsburgh Steelers do. And they did it again. They're still alive in the playoffs. They're still alive to keep Mike Tomlin's streak going. What a cool, fun win to watch.
Yeah, I just think, like, you see games like last night where the team is looking at Russ and looking at Nathaniel Hackett, and you just see that there's just such little belief. And Mike Tomlin is the opposite of that, right? It's the other end of the spectrum where the team could be starting Mitch Trubisky and then starting a rookie. And,
it's like Michael find a way. Right. Totally agree.
And I, you know, I'd go as far as, like, Andy Reid is getting older, and if the Chiefs were to ever move on from Andy Reid, it's like, who, you know, if you had to pick a current head coach, who would you want? I think a lot of people might say Bill Belichick, right? Because he's greatest coach of all time. But I don't know. Mike Tomlin for me is right there. And we've talked about it several times on the show. Just like, I don't think he gets enough respect as one of the top coaches in the NFL. Like, I would probably take Reid or Belichick, but you can make an argument to me and say, no, I'd want Mike Tomlin. And I wouldn't blame you for that. And so I just don't think he gets enough credit there. This was a game where they weren't really playing particularly well, but they stayed in it defensively. The Raiders are just, Derek Carr cannot play in the cold. It's just, it's comical at this point. And, you know, they believed and they were able to get it done at the last second here. And kudos to the franchise for what it meant. 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. And
right.
Just very cool. Very cool moment here for a team that is still trying to keep that Tomlin streak of good ball alive. And like, right there.
Those things are so like meaningless to other teams, even that kind of stuff, right? Like, oh, like, I don't mean this to be a shot at the Chiefs, but like Patrick Mahomes has never lost a game in September or whatever like that. You know what I'm saying? Like I fully buy in that this type of stuff matters to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, it's just a different team. And like Mike Tomlin, again, like, so it's weird how underrated he is. This is his 16th NFL season. Do you know how old he is? Because I had to double check this. Do you know how old he is?
I would guess 47.
He is 50 years old, and he is finishing his 16th season as the head coach of one of the, not just an NFL team, one of the NFL's Tiffany brands. I mean, like, just an incredible run that they have had.
That's the Steelers' whole thing, is they don't have a lot of head coaches in their franchise history. They get that right, and they got this one right, and I don't see the Tomlin reign as the head coach ending anytime soon.
Let's do Christmas Day in order. The Green Bay Packers outlasted the Miami Dolphins 26-20. And the weird part about this kind of stuff, Pete, is when this happens, you look at the records and it's like, well, the Packers are 7-8, and you feel like, man, they stink. I can't believe they beat the really good Dolphins. Dolphins are 8-7. Like, one game separates these two teams now because the Packers just will not go away.
Bad day for Tua and on. Interceptions were horrible. I mean, they were horrible, horrible picks. And
they are, I think nobody has wanted to admit this. They are losing steam, the Dolphins. Like, they are really,
big
really
time,
losing steam.
Big time. It's hard for me to think that this team is not going to fall out at this stage. They need
who's leaping them? Like, I'm sorry, not to interrupt. Maybe the Steelers would be, because like, do you think the Patriots, the Jets, the Titans are catching the Dolphins in the AFC playoff race?
Well, they have the Patriots and Jets left. And I mean, that game to me, when you're going into New England with the way the Dolphins are playing and the way Tua is playing against the Patriots defense, are we really sure they're going to win that game? And then suddenly, I don't know, right? I think New England becomes interesting. New York becomes interesting, who has them the week after. You know, this is an 8-17 that I could really easily see going 8-9 at this stage with the way that they play this game.
I do think that Tua has opened the questions back. Like, you do wonder... Yes. You know, like, what this is a weird way to put it, but like, is this a Rams Jared Goff thing? Like, you move on from the quarterback who's kept you kind of competitive and in pursuit of somebody even better. And like, who is that someone better? I mean, like, it's hard to envision that right now.
No, I think it's still going to be Tua, but he's got to, I mean, these 2 weeks are huge for him, like, because if you fall off and you end up losing these last two games and you're out of the postseason, it is going to be a question heading into next year. And I think you can solidify that. Like, same thing on the other side with Daniel Jones in the NFC. If you make the playoffs, I think you have a stronger, you know, case to be the guy continued. But what you have in front of both of these teams, Dolphins and the Giants, are the quarterback needs to win and make the postseason to feel like they're going to have a safe scenario in the offseason and job. And then the Packers could just continue to stay alive on the other side. I mean, it seemed like hope was gone for them, and they just continue to win.
I'm so interested to watch the Packers kind of figure this out. I mean, I don't believe in them. Like, the Packers and Bucks, I don't believe in whatsoever, but I do not want to play them in the playoffs. Like, I just want nothing to do with that. We have talked about it enough already, so let's go ahead and do it. The Rams blasted the Broncos.
So bad.
51-14. This was the Nickelodeon game. I believe Baker Mayfield was the MVP. Patrick Starr on the Nickelodeon broadcast roasted Russell Wilson. I know Mark wrote about that at SBNation.com. Dude, this is like, again, it's only football related. Like, you talked about with, you know, the Browns. Like, so this is just football, but like, that's obviously what people care about. Like, this is the bad place. Like, there's like, I don't know how it gets, like, it's impossible for it to get worse. It's somehow, some way, the Broncos keep finding a way.
I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do because of that contract. Like, you saw a lot of Broncos Twitter going online last night and being like, we need to move on. And like, sometimes fans are emotional and they're passionate, and you say, okay, let everyone just relax, right? You don't necessarily, but this is valid. This is valid. I don't know how, and it's crazy to say this with more than $100 million dead cap hit, but I don't know how you start him next year. He's done.
I don't know how you start him on Sunday.
Yeah. He's done. He's done. And it's the worst trade in NFL history. It really is, because of the signing, the money.
The Herschel Walker trade is still worse, but it's,
I don't know. We're getting to the point of that being a conversation.
It's the worst trade in modern NFL history, right? Because that was a different time. You know what, sure, I mean? So I think that's fair.
And it's not even close. Like, if you take the Walker trade out, let's just say, right, it's not even close. I mean, there's nothing close to this.
The crazy part about that is, like, there's universal agreement on what you said, especially like with the outlier.
Yes.
And like, we're not even like one whole season through. You're like, it didn't even take a whole season for that to become like universally accepted by people. You know, it's just, it is astounding. And like, I really like the Broncos. Like, I the Broncos are in the, like, you know, we all have the box of teams that aren't like affiliated with our teams that we just kind of like. You know, I like the Broncos. I like the energy. I like the history. I like the colors. Like, I want to like the Broncos.
I'm probably on the other side of that. Understand.
No. Yes. I recognize that. I think the Eagles are kind of in your box, which is why like we're such great fools with one another. I don't mean to like attack the article, but I read an article recapping this game in The Athletic. And it was about, can Peyton Manning save the Broncos? And it was like, the Broncos have to involve Peyton Manning. It's no, quit chasing this. Like, quit, like, start. Like, you can't just like recapture magic. Like, the Broncos are pure and total nostalgia.
This one's all for Peyton.
I mean, like,
when are they gonna
enough.
Say that?
Like,
you know,
just do the work. You know what I mean? Like, and the Broncos are so afraid to do the work that every other NFL team seemingly, for the most part, is committed to doing. Like, you cannot just keep the good times rolling. The good times end. Find new good times. This is so bad. They are so down.
Give me, I don't know, give me Jimmy G or Gardner Minshew or Tom Brady. So give me someone on this team. I just want to see the team with a decent quarterback. We thought in the offseason they had finally gotten one. They don't have one, and they're just locked in to all that. We've never seen a scenario like this in modern offseason history. I don't know what they do. It's going to be fascinating to watch in the offseason.
It's going to be fascinating to watch how Russell handles like the public side of this. Like, if somebody, like, if it is a Minshew or whatever that is brought in for competition, like how he handles that. You know what I mean? Like, it's
not
just,
well. I'm telling you, like, it's not going to be well.
But you know, like, what makes it so interesting is that, like, you said Tuanon, like, you know, people bag on Tua, but like, there are the like Tua loyalists, right? Like, right. You know what I'm saying? There are people who will like stand up and fight for Tua. Like, who is doing that for us?
Nobody.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what fans are like, no, guys, like, did you see Cortland Sutton? Like, there's nobody. You know what I mean? This dude is on an island right now.
From what I saw on Twitter, and you got to be careful with Twitter because sometimes it's squeaky wheel. You see this in every fan base. You got to think that 95% of fans are on board. Really? Like, really? Which is wild. Just wild.
I think the reason for that is it's not just that he's bad. He has made them into a joke. You know what I mean? With his his persona, and it's not just like his persona, but his, you could call it arrogance. Like, his arrogance made them into a joke. He set them up to not just be bad, but to be a punchline. And there's a difference between being bad and being the laughing stock of the NFL.
There's a true argument that Denver is in the worst situation in the NFL. Really? Really?
I mean, what do you mean an argument? Like, who's close?
I mean, I would say we discussed it, but Cleveland.
Well, that's a pretty extenuating circumstance, right?
Sure.
Like, obviously.
But that's
so
it.
Like,
that's it.
I mean, I would argue, now that I think, like, so while the trade was really bad, at the very least, like, on paper, it made sense, right? Like, it just collapsed. But like, the New Orleans trade was worse. Like, why did New Orleans give up their first round pick? Like, New Orleans is in a tough spot from a, you know, offseason standpoint as well.
New Orleans, too, is. They're a little cap. They messed up like, their cap a little bit.
What are you gonna do if you move on from Nathaniel Hackett? Like, who wants this? Like, who, you know, like, you, like, you're gonna call Dan Quinn back? You know what I mean? Like, we didn't even touch on the Rams, but like, cool, you blew up.
I think you got to cut your losses. I know it sounds crazy with how much money they're paying him. I think you got to just cut him. I know it sounds nuts.
Cut Russ, you're saying?
Yeah, because you're right. Who, like, which man is going to come into the situation? I know that everyone wants to be a head coach, and I know that's what all these coordinators and assistants are working toward. I would not take this job. You're set up for complete failure for us as the quarterback.
My prediction right now, if Russell is on the roster, the Broncos are the last team to fill their head coaching vacancy. Like, we don't know how many vacancies there will be, but right now there are two with the Panthers and the Colts. So, like, say that number ends up being eight.
Usually
right?
Around seven or eight, yes.
Right. So, say seven or eight, if the Broncos are one of them, they are the last team to fill it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, I can't disagree.
Final game, the Bucs pulled one out, I guess, against the Trace McSorley-led Arizona Cardinals. I tweeted this out. This game made me like football less. 19-16, the final score. This was just gross. I mean, like, went to overtime. Oh, man. I'm like, what? Like, this was lame. But the Bucs now have the leg up in the NFC South.
Yeah. This is it for Tom Brady in Tampa. I'm wondering if he plays there or he plays again next year anywhere. But this is it. This is, you know, the last run here. And I don't have a easy time feeling like Tampa's definitely going to be Carolina. And so we'll see. Like, they're in real danger here. They're in the danger zone. They barely got out of this game. And you just wonder what that means for next week and beyond.
I tell you what, though, like, I agree with you 100%. I still don't want the Cowboys to visit them in the wild card round. Like, I'm still not a fan of that. You know what I mean? Like, just.
Well, you don't want to play Rodgers or Brady under any circumstances. I don't blame you for that, because there is the magic of the postseason, right? And so, you know, you end up seeing what happens here. But yeah, I don't believe in Tampa anymore. And I wouldn't be stunned if Carolina somehow manages to get in, which would be the story of the year. You know, we talked about the come up of the week, but mm-hmm. this would be the story of the NFL season is Carolina.
It'd be back to back years that teams who fire their head coaches midseason. Yep. although, you know, it wasn't like the Raiders fired John Gruden because they were bad. You know what I mean? Like, obviously there were some different circumstances there as well. All right, Rachel, please grace us with your presence. Well, first of all, I'm taking the Chargers, Pete. You're taking Chargers Colts.
Chargers tonight for me.
Okay, Rachel, Chargers Colts, your favorite things that we said, your thoughts on the week, and of course, MFW MVP.
Chargers, easy. My biggest takeaways from this week, you guys already touched on Nick Bosa, him. There's so many impressive defensive players, but he's him. I mean, you got to give it to him. Also, poor Justin Fields, like, he only rushed for 11 yards, which is like his lowest of the season. So,
I mean, we didn't even touch on that. That's why you're the best, Rachel.
So that was kind of sad. Points that I loved. Pete, I loved your come up of the week this week. That was phenomenal. I also loved the conversation starter that you presented when you were talking about a panic level when it comes to Watson.
Yeah.
RJ, I loved your points about the triggering loss for the Lions. I also loved your point about Daniel Jones and how he's made things like super, super difficult in this position. And I also, my favorite point was what separates Josh Allen from Patrick Mahomes and like the mistakes. So I'm going to give it to RJ today.
Woo!
RJ, you know,
some people are saying, Pete, that I am the Patrick Mahomes of Monday Football Monday, and you were the Josh Allen of Monday Football.
Whoa.
I wouldn't go back and look. I wouldn't go back and do some research here, but I don't know for sure. RJ's been on quite an MF double MVP slump. So sometimes you got to tip your cap, and I'm glad that he's able to get out of this rut. And so congratulations to you, RJ. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. And so, you know, good for you.
You know, I want to thank Rachel first and foremost, and second most, and third most. But after Rachel first, second, and third, I want to thank you, Pete, making it a race.
Yes.
I want to thank Patrick Mahomes for being so great and allowing me to shine, light on that. Sure. I want to thank the Cowboys for beating the Eagles and ruining Christmas for Philadelphia fans. I want to thank the Ravens, our Ravens, Rachel, for being great as always.
You refused to lose today, and
I really did.
I appreciate that.
I would like Pete to, as we leave, give us the heartiest of ho ho ho's as you can. Like, I'm talking like Santa, you know, putting a cap on Christmas. You know, put the decorations in the attic on next year. Okay, wait, I wasn't done. So now let's do it one more time. Here we go.
Ho ho ho! Merry Christmas.
I'll see you next week.
And happy holidays. Happy holidays as well, too, our Jewish friends.
And go Cowboys.